Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and what is going on, everybody? Well, I don't know. Yesterday was one of the strangest days I have seen in my 38 years of trading. The market had about a 400-point range, had heavy volume, but actually went nowhere. So it was actually quite fascinating to watch it kind of whip up and down on huge volume. I've seen a lot of things over the years, but that is one thing I have not seen is that type of wild trade on heavy volume. That was the third or fourth heaviest volume day of the year, and where we really, you know, The S&P closed down a little bit. The Nasdaq got hammered, but the Dow was pretty flat. But, of course, that is all action that is very consistent with a market top. Again, notice the common theme. You get this kind of action when markets are topping. I mean, you know, we have probably, you know, we've made new closing lows in the Dow, new closing lows everywhere. And certainly we could get a rally, you know, up a little bit which would be a selling opportunity. You can now see the trend is definitely lower. You go back to when we called the top of the market, which was January 29th on that blow off to the upside. And, of course, we have been obviously under pressure since. Now, you can look at a number of reasons for a potential, you know, if you want to listen to the news, which is a bunch of horse poop, you know, because the news doesn't mean anything. The news does not drive the markets. The markets drive the news. And, you know, we can continue to try and figure out, you know, why this happened and try to, you know, gauge in the news. But news plays out in the markets long before you or I ever get to see it. And that's the key. You know, if you have the information ahead of time, okay, then, you know, maybe, you could act on it. Because, again, they will react. But typically, most news is already priced in to markets to begin with. You know, remember, as I say all the time, the big guys, they're paying people money to be on top of that news ahead of time. You know, because, again, if you know what you're looking for and you can scarf up all the data, you can put the numbers together yourselves. And that is always something that, you know, we understand. And even the high frequency traders that everybody so much hates, you know, they're only trading off of a couple of words and looking to drive momentum. But the actual big trades that come out, the positional trading that we see is always news that was well priced in ahead of time. And I think that is something that, you know, we tend to miss occasionally, is the way that things are priced in well before markets actually are ready to react. And that is, again, the assumption. So what we do know that most of the time, the numbers and the information is usually overpriced or underpriced in to the market. And what that means is that, you know, if the number is going to be bearish, then typically the markets are usually oversold going into that number. And if the numbers are going to be bullish, then more than likely they're going to be, you know, overbought into that number. So again, this is more of learning the market footprint and what we and what our expectations are of what we're going to see. And, you know, I continue to, you know, always warn, you know, not to let the news affect you, because you and me are nowhere near the right spot to be able to take advantage of the news, because it's been played out long before in the market. And again, I think that is something that, you know, we want to start to understand. And of course, even if we go back to, for example, the cattle on feed report last Friday, as we talked about many times, ahead going into that number, that the number is going to be bearish. There was no doubt that the number is going to be bearish, and the number was bearish. In the meantime, the cattle markets have actually been higher than they were going into the report. They've actually rallied a little bit off of the number, okay, because they'd already priced in what the number was supposed to be. And that's something that, again, we want to make sure that we stay on top of it, because at the end of the day, we want to know, you know, that we would be more concerned with the footprint of the market beforehand and not try to react after. And that's really what you look for. I mean, you know, for example, you know, you've got the when you have like a grain report, you know, if you can see what they're pricing in ahead of time, usually you want to fade or go against what's priced in, because, again, typically, more often than not, the market is overpriced it in. And I think that's something that, you know, you have to just be aware of. And, you know, it's very typical of almost all major economic indicators that come out is, most of the time, they're well more often priced in than not priced in. And I think that's something that you just have to be prepared for and ready for, and not try to, again, outguess, outsmart, outthink, and just let the market do what it tells you to do. That is something I think is much more important from our standpoint, is to let the markets dictate and tell us what we're supposed to be doing. And if you wait for that footprint, you know, then you're going to see, you know, much better results for yourself, and taking out a lot of the guesswork that many of us put into the market. So that is why we need to be much more on top of what we're doing. And just a little heads up, next week on Tuesday, we've got Stan Larimer coming up, which has been very involved in the cryptocurrencies, and they've got a new one coming out, so you might want to make sure you tune in for that. And also, don't forget to download the show every day at libertytalk.fm. You download the Bubba Show and the Sporting Edge every single day. And of course, don't forget to get my daily update, which I send to you for free. All you have to do is go to bubbatrading.com. And I will put you on the list to get my daily update, which is a quick 5-minute video or so, in which I tell you what I saw happening that day and what I expect for tomorrow. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back with more after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. And let's get Bill Whittle and Cruz take on the Facebook fiasco. Let's check that out right now. Here we go.
Bill Whittle and Cruz. Now, most Americans don't know the names of any political consulting firms, but now Cambridge Analytica has been battered into our heads every hour on the half hour and 15 minute by CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, and all the others. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Scott Ott with Bill Whittle and Stephen Green. And today on Right Angle, we're going to take a look at not just what's happening with Cambridge Analytica, the political consulting firm that apparently unleashed perhaps millions of names that Facebook had gathered and their proclivities, likes and dislikes, but what it means actually to us. And thanks to my colleague, Bill Whittle, we're going to take a look at what a post-Facebook world might be like, and it's hardly imaginable. Now, men of a certain age like us, gentlemen, I think can imagine such a thing because we were alive before Facebook. I know that's a long time ago, but there are a lot of people who have grown up with it and can't imagine anything different. And just to not to go too deeply into the details, but Facebook's database is made available to researchers at you know, who are doing actual legitimate academic work. And apparently somebody from Cambridge Analytica, the political consulting firm, which not coincidentally worked with Donald Trump's campaign, claimed to be a researcher, but then actually not only took a couple of 100,000 names of people who signed up for a psychology app test, but then tapped into all their friends and all their connections. And so perhaps millions of people's data has been released into the wild now. Gentlemen, this is, we've come to live this way. Stephen Green, I know you're kind of one of those leave me the heck alone libertarians, yet you're not an alien to social media. What do you picture as the defining characteristic element of the post-Facebook world, if such a thing should ever happen?
You know, a return to the glory days of the blogosphere, Scott. Glenn Reynolds posted on this at Instapundit, I think it was earlier this week, that the problem with social media is that it is subject to cascading failure generated by hysteria from all of this sharing of stuff that may or may not be true. The beauty of the old blogosphere, which is how all three of us got started 14, 15, 16 years ago now, is that, oh, I know, we're all getting old, is that people have to come to you. And maybe that means less traffic, but it also means you don't have a single point of failure. Yeah, we're linking to source material. We're not linking to some other Facebook post. It's self-correcting, in other words, or at least it tends to be. It wants to be. It's not perfect, but it's better than social media. Listen, the Trump campaign fired Cambridge Analytics, I believe, in the summer of 2016 before the election. In 2012, the Obama campaign was caught doing similar hoovering of user data, and the official under-the-table Facebook response was, well, just don't do it after the election, okay? And if that's not an exact quote, it's very close to it. This story I just saw yesterday. So I don't want to say both sides are doing it. What I want to say is that we have this platform, Facebook, that hoovers up all of this data. The fact that people exploit it doesn't change the fact that this platform exists. The problem is the platform, and the platform is Facebook. You know, I tell people this all the time. If you want to share a cute dog video or a silly lolcat, something like that, please use Facebook, use Twitter. But those are very poor places for a honest debate. They're very poor places to get your news. They're really bad places for hot takes. And just stay off them as best you can, because I will tell you this right now. If you're a regular Facebook user, Facebook knows more about you and your friends and their friends' friends, probably to all 6 degrees, than you know about yourself.
See, I don't think that would solve it, Steve. I'm just picturing the anti-ad right now. Stephen Green, the congressional candidate, once posted lolcats to Facebook.
Darn right I did. I love those lolcats. I like
lolcats. Bad for America, bad for you. So, Bill Whittle, you are an addict. You like to get the hits that come from posting your material on Facebook and other social media platforms. But as a consequence of that, you've basically given Facebook your business. And it's really hard. Like right now, years ago, I stopped really posting things to my own website because I thought, well, why bother with that and get a few dozen people to look at it when I can instantly get 1,000 people to look at it on Facebook? How do you survive, Bill Whittle, in a post-Facebook world?
Well, 'tis a consummation devoutly to be wished, Scott. First of all, let's just start there. I'm not addicted to Facebook at all. I don't ever look at Facebook. I use it as a primary means for distributing this message because Facebook became what AOL was when the internet started, which is the internet within the internet.
Yep.
In the very early days of the internet, it was AOL, and you could go to AOL and you could get mail. You've got mail. And files done and all the rest of that stuff, which meant that basically even though AOL was just a location on the internet, it was an internet within the internet. And Facebook is exactly the same thing. The reason this is a news story and people are hyperventilating is because Donald Trump may have gotten a hold of some of their information. Can only imagine how terrifying it must be for people to realize that their personal information might be used against them politically and perhaps even used to filter the content that they may get or not get. That would surely be a terrible, terrible thing if that were to ever happen. Facebook and Google, they're basically the same breed. You know, I mean, Apple makes the hardware, but it's really Facebook and Google that own YouTube and control the social media situation along with Twitter and a few others. Their credibility has been eroding slowly over the last several years and then, you know, like going broke. It starts slowly and then more quickly. You know, we find I don't have to go through this again because we've been through it so many times, but Prager University suing Facebook and Google. Prager University has a million plus people sign up to watch their videos, and when they post a video, it goes out to 2% of their users because Facebook doesn't like what Prager University has to say. So I'd be very, very happy to see this whole thing just go. And it's more pernicious than that, too. I've heard from many people in Tea Party events who simply do a mailing not to unsolicited people. They simply mail their own members saying there's going to be a meeting and so on, and they'd send it by a Gmail, and nobody gets the email. It just doesn't go through. It's an accident, of course, some kind of a
Bill, can
technical glitch.
Can I jump in and ask you how far you're Please. Willing to go in your conviction that something is awry here? You're a conservative, but don't you think the government needs to step in and restrain Facebook and Google from doing this?
As we've had this discussion many times before, I'm probably at the back of the line of people who want to have the government step in and administer anything. However, the problem with monopolies is not that they're capitalists. The problem with monopolies is that they're anti-capitalists. They're anti-market. And an information monopoly is even more dangerous than a transportation or an energy or a communications monopoly in terms of telephones. These are monopolies now, and they are violating their terms of agreement. I think it's a fraud case more than anything. Maybe it's buried on page 900 of the terms of agreement. Undoubtedly, it is. It's buried on 900 of the page terms of agreement that nobody ever reads. They just simply click on. But Facebook does not announce that they're going to suppress conservative content. They don't make that clear to you when you sign up for Facebook that they're going to determine which political views are transmitted and which ones are suppressed.
And that is somewhat factual. Again, if you've ever noticed, and there are a lot of things that don't get through, and it is interesting. And we're going to come back with more of this interview with the Bill Whittle gang and let them continue to explain their points of view. But in the meantime, this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, and we are here on Thursday, and tomorrow is obviously Good Friday, and I want to wish everybody a happy Easter and a happy Passover and a blessed Good Friday. In the meantime, don't forget to download the show every day at libertytalk.fm, and we do have all the content you'll ever need if you go to our station there. And, of course, I want to remind you about our high school investing information. And of course, we have a program that goes out to any high school that wants it. We give it to them for free, but we do need some help with the funding now after 7 years, as we have now just surpassed 450 high schools. And if you'd like to help out, go to Patreon, patreon.com/BubbaTrading. In the meantime, this is The Bubba Show, and I am Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back with more after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz.
Fly me to the moon. Let me... What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you. And, of course, we're listening to Bill Whittle and Steve Green and vision on what's going on with Facebook and Google. So let's get back to it right now.
What? So it has become something more than a privately owned company in the same way that utilities are more than privately owned companies. We have certain regulations against utilities because it's not economical for the – let's just take an example that just seems to make sense to me. In Los Angeles, it doesn't make sense for there to be 15 different electric companies, each one of them constructing their own wires with their own electrical outlets in your house, right? That's just the reality of the world. And so that's usually limited to one carrier or one or two monopolies. And because of this – those private companies have to undergo the kind of scrutiny that I don't think should be or needs to be applied to other businesses where you have a choice. And this is pretty much what it's coming down to, Scott. It's no longer a question of, well, I choose to go to Facebook or don't choose to go to Facebook. It's now becoming like the electric company, where I don't like the way this electric company's service is being provided, but I don't have 15 choices of who I can get my electricity from. Therefore, we're stuck in a world where we have to do things that we wouldn't want to do in a truly free market where we did have an endless series of choices.
Bill, if I can jump in real quick, Scott, if you don't mind, common carrier rules like apply to a telecommunications company would be perfect for Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google, in which they can't be held liable for the content. In other words, if you conspired back when AT&T was the phone company, if you conspired to commit a crime over the phone, AT&T couldn't be held legally or financially responsible for the content that was carried on their phone lines, even though that content was a crime or a conspiracy to commit a crime. The same thing should apply to these huge networking giants. They can't be held liable for anything on their platforms, but they must transmit all messages equally.
Yeah, that would be great. And there's just one last thing to add about this, and that's, of course, the possibility of it actually ever happening. And that's not going to happen until Facebook gets played out. I mean, that's really what it's going to come down to. Is it played out? Have people had enough of it? I don't think that anything in this age is eternal. I think that sooner or later, people are just going to be played out. It's lasted a far longer time than MySpace, but MySpace was everything, and then MySpace got played out. I get the feeling that the thrill of Facebook, you know, all these people you'd never met before, and you know, high school, you know, communicating with your aunt, and you know, in Australia, and all the rest of it. I think that can stay, but I get the feeling I feel like it's being played out, and I don't think that young people are into Facebook the way that it was 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago.
Yeah. See, Bill, the reason why you are so wrong, I don't have time here to address the reason why you're so wrong. If you'll just go read the article that I just wrote on my MySpace page, I think that you will see that and the discussion I've been leading on Prodigy on this very topic. I think that you're going to understand that things like this don't get played out. They're eternal. They go on forever.
Well, we will link that article on our
Facebook. I'll see you on CompuServe, buddy.
Thank you. So, you know, ladies and gentlemen, I think to me, all of this comes down to the fact that we knew that they were a snake when we picked them up.
Right.
We knew going into it that our information is out there. In fact, the moment you log on to the internet, you kind of give away most of your privacy. It's not like having a mailbox. You know, in the mailbox, if
a
you put
person
something.
Box.
What's that?
A person box.
A person
box.
I'm sorry. Forgive me. But when you put something in your mailbox, it's addressed to a particular individual, and at least theoretically, nobody else is reading and it goes there. But when you go out on the internet, you immediately reveal your location, you reveal what server you're using, and a lot of other details about yourself. Even if you don't go on Facebook and, you know, like every video that you like and post pictures of your food and where you are at any given moment of time, you can control a lot of those factors when you're on social media. You can say, don't betray my location, only share this with people who are directly connected to me as friends, and you can keep things private. Now, that's not preventing a researcher from coming in and saying, hey, Facebook, we want to use your data to do some research for the good of humanity, and have them betray all that information. But I would just say, if you're uncomfortable with all this, you just can't be on the internet. You just can't be out there at all. The other thing I'll add to this is that the problem that people are saying is that this information then gets into the hands of bad actors, you know, politicians, people who are trying to persuade you to vote for them. What kind of knucklehead makes a decision about who to vote for by crap that they see on Facebook?
So most people.
If you are that kind of knucklehead, then you deserve the elected officials that you get. I mean, if you're really persuaded by that, and the furthest your research goes is to say, hey, I saw a bad story about somebody, or I saw a good story about somebody, then we deserve the elected officials we get. All of this comes down to wisdom and discernment. And you may say that wisdom and discernment are, you know, just honored in the breach for the most part in this country. But I happen to think that most Americans are not suckers for every little pop-up ad or Facebook game. And they're not necessarily persuaded by every fake news story that they see on the internet. As we record this right now, Mark Zuckerberg was scheduled within the next 24 hours sometime to make a statement. Zuckerberg, of course, being CEO of Facebook. We do not know, as we record this, what the nature of that statement was. Perhaps he is announcing the post-Facebook world. For Bill Whittle, Stephen.
And of course, that is, and basically, although they didn't know what he said, he basically said nothing. And but really, he intimated that, you know, he would like to see some regulation, which in turn does Facebook the most amount of good, because it then puts him into the same position as places like Comcast and places like, you know, AT&T back in the day. And that is a bigger problem, because you're now again destroying and taking away the potential free market. And I think that is one of the problems in this country today, is we do have the lack of free markets. You know, I've been trying to, you know, for example, where I live, if I want internet, I've got two choices. I can either pay for a T1 line and have it run in, or I can go to Comcast. Those are my choices. And, you know, to me, that is not a choice at all. And it's funny, because obviously the Comcast of the world and the other cable companies in most parts of their business have no competition. And why is that? This is, again, goes back to the world of Facebook and Google and things like that, is they don't have true competition because nobody can be in. And that also applies to Amazon and the retail world. You know, President Trump yesterday said that he wanted to go after Amazon. And I'm not saying that I necessarily 100% agree with going after him, but they have systematically put many places out of business. And I think that is a problem, as to, you know, because of the unfair advantage that they have. And of course, what I'm going to do when we come back after the break is, as I'm going to share with you an interview I did yesterday on Fox, with, you know, talking about some of these things. But, you know, the boys make a very good point of the way that these things are monopolized. And again, you know, it does go back to, you talk about, you go back to what is potentially going on. And, you know, you realize that you don't really have the freedom of choice. You have no choice. And again, that is the destruction of the free market system, because when you allow these places to get so big, they do then destroy any competition in their way, very similar to the banking industry. Yes, the JP Morgans and Bank of Americas and those there are in competition with each other, but I think in my mind, they actually work together in a way to eliminate the possibility of a small startup jumping in to then become much bigger. And so that, I think, becomes the bigger problem, the absolute lack of competition, the absolute lack of the free market system. And I think that, to me, that is what's wrong with our country today, is that you've got you've only got a few choices to do a few of the things you're looking to do. And they go from not having regulation to then benefiting by those same regulations. So think about that while we get ready to go to break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. And, of course, we want to make sure you download the show every day at libertytalk.fm. And, of course, we have, 24-hour day content there. So, you can certainly check out some of the others that have a lot of the similar points of view. And then also don't forget about our high school investing program. We do educate in the high school level and have donated for the past 7 years a curriculum that the high schools get to use for free, the school system, so that, because they have no money anyways, so they're never going to pay for it. But this was something that we decided to do, and we're looking to get some sponsorship and to get some help. And if you'd like to be one of those, and you can go to Patreon, patreon.com/BubbaTrading. And if you do, I will give you a free week of my advisory service for futures. You can check it out. In the meantime, this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to step out here for a break, and we'll be right back with more of The Bubba Show after the break. Todd Bubba Horowitz, The Bubba Show. Welcome back to The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And yesterday I did an interview on Fox, and I wanted to share that with you. So let's go check it out right now.
Let's bring in today's panel. We got Jonathan Honig from Capitalist Pig Hedge Fund. He is also a Fox News contributor. Annika Green, a former speechwriter for President George W. Bush. And Todd Horowitz, the host of The Bubba Trading Show. Todd, let me go to you first. We had good GDP numbers. As Nicole was just stating, part of that was because of a 4% surge in consumer spending. So why the Wall Street pouting?
Hi, David. Well, look, the markets have been overbought. The markets are overvalued. There's still a lot of things that are going on. Look at the strength of the dollar today, which, in my opinion, is going to be the black swan event. If the dollar gets too strong, that kills global lending. So forget about GDP right now. It's about the big global story. And there's a lot of issues all over the place, including China, which could create a major sell-off here.
Well, Annika, Wall Street can be fickle. I mean, we're seeing examples of that. It's very nervous right now. It can be a disconnect with what's happening with the economy, which seems extraordinarily strong by a lot of different measures. Wasn't that a lot of people were saying when President Trump was saying, I'm responsible for the market doing well? And frankly, there's a lot of evidence of that. Still, he should have associated himself more with the economy than with the market, which can be so fickle.
That has historically been what presidents have done. And so by making those comments and associating himself with the market, he then is tied to the market performance in ways that may not end up being positive. Some reports are saying that the gains under Trump have actually been erased by about 37%, which is not something he's going to want to see long term.
Jonathan, for so long under the Obama administration, you and I were talking about how the market was doing well despite the economy because of what the Fed was doing and just printing out money. Now the market's not doing well in spite of the fact that the economy is.
Well, the market is worried about, I think, its number one risk right now, David, which isn't even a slowing economy. It is the government. You weren't worried about necessarily perhaps Barack Obama talking smack about an oil company, but not Amazon.com, not Facebook. And if you take a look at where this tremendous damage has been, I wouldn't let the market move for the Dow to persuade you today. Look at the internals, David. Almost 200 new 52-week lows, only a handful of new 52-week highs. rise. So stocks like Tesla down 7% today. Tesla's bonds now yielding more than Ukraine's bonds. There's some real worry right now in the technology sector. And David, that's the sector that government right now, whether it's Amazon, Tesla, Facebook, has in its crosshairs.
Well, let's stay with Amazon, Jonathan, because President Trump looks like he wants to go after Amazon and possibly change the company's tax treatment. That's according to Axios. Now, the White House did respond to this report earlier today. Listen to this.
The president has said many times before he's always looking to create a level playing field for all businesses, and this is no different. And he's going to always can look at different ways, but there aren't any specific policies on the table at this time.
Okay, Jonathan, is that enough for you as an investor?
Well, it's unfortunate it's not true. I mean, also today, for example, we got word about the president's wishes for new tariffs or extended tariffs with South Korea for light trucks. So I don't think as an investor you can take it to the bank that the president is looking for low, fair taxes, equal taxes for everyone. And this, the fact that, as you said, he's going after Amazon. I mean, this is one of the great stalwarts of the American, the world economy. The fact that any employer, the fact that any business person has to be worried about the president going after them, no wonder investors are selling first to ask questions later.
Well, $53 billion in market value shed after that report from Axios. But, Annika, I do want to point out here that even the reporters at Axios are being very clear in saying, you know, that it, even some of the things, the statements he's made to sources they've spoken to, the president was actually off the mark and didn't really have the facts together with the regards to, say, the U.S. Postal Service. The Postal Service actually benefits from Amazon. He thinks Amazon's hurting them. Does that kind of, again, allay your fears about the president on this one, Annika?
Well, one of the things we've seen with President Trump is he likes to get a lot of feedback, and it's not always from people within the White House. He talks to friends a lot. The Axios report said that five different people talked to him about Amazon, talking about brick-and-mortar stores being harmed by Amazon, and that's been a long-running narrative. But what you ultimately see is that his comments on the fly don't dictate his policies, and his advisors do weigh in ultimately.
Yeah, Todd, especially if there's no there with regards to what Amazon is or is not benefiting. And real quick, I do want to ask you about this. You know, some say, again, in that report that he talks to a lot of his friends that are in real estate. He talks to a lot of his friends that are in retail, and they say, look, Amazon is killing our business. They're hurting the mom-and-pop shops throughout the country, and that's got at least the heartfelt sentiment of the president, even if it doesn't mean he changes policy.
Well, Cheryl, I think what you're seeing here is that the markets have taken what Amazon is doing, and Amazon has gotten an unfair advantage because they had more access to capital than the average small business. So they've systematically taken every small business and put them out of business, destroying shopping malls, which is a lot of people, a lot of help, and a lot of employees. Now, I know Amazon's a great company, but they do have an unfair advantage because of their access to capital, because of the way
the system works right now.
I think that it's
whatever. Let me just counter that. Whatever access to capital that Amazon has, they've earned. It is the American public. It's the people who make Amazon so powerful.
No,
They're the ones who shop at Amazon.
I totally disagree with you.
Unfair.
You're totally off base here because, again, the banks are not lending to the average small business. They're making the average small business go to their credit cards and go to predatory lenders, not lending to normal small businesses, which is the real crux and the real problem of the lack of a free market, which we have right now. Because of the interest rate set by the Federal Reserve.
You're both making actually very fair and good points. And you're both, actually, the panel's going to stick around, guys.
We want them to stick around.
Yeah,
we like the enthusiasm of this crowd. Meanwhile, a big trade story coming out of the White House. The first America First trade deal of the administration. The South Koreans agreeing to a deal that will spare them from the steel tariffs. Let's go to Adam Shapiro at the White House with more. Hi, Adam.
Hi, David. And yes, the White House, the administration, spinning this as a victory. And in some parts, it definitely is when you consider that the South Koreans have agreed to limit their exports of steel to the United States, 70% of a three-year average over the last 3 years. But that's just only part of the deal. Here's what Sarah Sanders had to say about it.
This is a big deal for the American automotive industry. It's a big deal for our parts manufacturers. It's a big deal for our pharmaceutical companies. And ultimately, it's a big deal and a major win for American workers and American businesses.
And that's one of the reasons the president tweeted earlier today that the U.S. trade representative just announced an agreement in principle with South Korea on Quoris. A great deal for American and Korean workers. Let's now focus on our important security relationship, which, of course, there's the potential for the upcoming meeting with the North Korean leader. Senator Orrin Hatch, who is chair of the Senate Finance Committee, actually said this because he's been opposed to the potential of tariffs that the administration has been talking about. He said, quote, the agreement in principle announced today makes steps toward improved implementation and maintains the strong economic ties between our two nations. As we move forward, it is imperative that the administration continue to monitor Korea's compliance with the agreement so that it fully benefits American manufacturers, service providers, farmers, and ranchers. You should know there are people who think this deal is one for the dogs when you look at what they got for automakers. For instance, automakers now can only ship per maker 25,000 cars. That'll grow to 50,000. But as the critics point out, no manufacturer here in the States has ever shipped more than 11,000 cars. But on the other hand, this may be more like the dog party and go, dog, go, because there's a lot that the U.S. gains in this deal.
Adam,
to celebrate. Nice, back to you.
Nice summary. Thank you very much. Our panel is back to react. Annika, it looks like from the outside, it appears that the threat of tariffs against South Korea paid off here.
Well, it certainly brought them to the table, but that's not something that surprises me. South Korea has been a strong and longstanding ally of the United States and vice versa. So,
and that is something that, you know, again, this is was, I believe, Trump's plan from the beginning is to shake it up and make the markets free and fair and get everything on fair footing and fair ground. And I think that is something that we should be appreciative of, that we have somebody who is actually looking out for us. In the meantime, this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. And of course, I want to wish everybody a happy Easter, a happy Passover, and a blessed Good Friday. As always, I thank you for being part of the show. And don't forget to download the show every day at libertytalk.fm. And of course, you can also download the Sporting Edge as well. This is the Bubba Show. I am Todd Bubba Horwitz. Everybody have a great holiday. And of course, the markets are closed tomorrow. So we'll see you back here. We will be here tomorrow, but of course, the markets will not be open. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. Have a great holiday, everybody. Have a great day off, and we'll see you tomorrow. Take care.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.